Abolition. Abolition. Today.
Good evening. Power to the people. I'm what people used to call an old head. How quickly one becomes an old head. But in the last 3 years, and most dramatically in the last 10 months, this old head has been moved to be overcome almost with joy to have lived to see the rebirth of a militant black movement that dares to take on the state. To take on the state in the form of the police. I'm not talking about the state of Mississippi or the state of Georgia, and it's not just in my city or in your city. It's taking on the cops everywhere that they occupy black communities. And it's also about black cops and black police chiefs and black mayors, too. So many beautiful young people, young black people and young non-black people, have defied the personification of the state, the black corporate democratic president, which makes this old head very, very happy. One of my most vivid, special memories was watching the split screen on television, I think it was PBS, on the evening that the St. Louis prosecutor announced that there was not going to be any indictment of the cop that killed Michael Brown in Ferguson. On one side of the television screen was President Obama, and he was droning on and on about respect for the rule of law and other such nonsense. On the other side of the screen was a scene from Ferguson, and there were young black people milling about. And then you saw the flickering of flames on the Ferguson side of the screen. And that was the answer to the county prosecutor, and that was the answer to the President of the United States. And that was a profound political statement by people in the street that the police could no longer count on having a monopoly on the use of force. A monopoly of force that they had used and abused for two generations to build a mass black incarceration state whose mission is to throw millions of black people in prison and to contain and terrorize black communities and to criminalize an entire people.
I pray one day I'll study one or more. Till that day I'll keep my mind sharp as my sword. Here I go, oh, 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 singing the warrior song.
So I battle to my people.
Abolition. Today. 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 Today.
He just heard a speech from Glenn Ford speaking after Ferguson. And that was followed by Warrior Song by Alex Boyer. Peace and welcome to Abolition Today, a weekly syndicated online radio program with a specific focus on modern slavery as it is practiced through the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and by for-profit prisons worldwide. We air live every Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, and 4 Pacific. Live streams and archived podcasts are available at abolitiontoday.org. And Abolition Today is also available on all major podcast platforms and is simulcast on the Black Talk Radio Network. My name is Yusuf Hassan. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Max Parthas. Peace, Max.
Peace, Brother Yusuf. I'm here at the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center and just vibing on that track and thinking about the warrior, Brother Glenn Ford, and giving him a salute in his journey to the next round.
Absolutely. You know, Glenn Ford, the founder of America's Black Forum, co-founder of the Black Agenda Report, you know, definitely transitioned back on July 28th of this year. Definitely going to be missed. He just made a major impact into black journalism and journalism itself. You know, and he definitely lit the fire under all the other media networks, you know, just like pointing out all of their BS. We acknowledge many historical events whose anniversaries just recently occurred, such as the Attica uprising, the murder of the 6 black children in Birmingham, Alabama, and of course there was 9/11, but not that 9/11, the September 11, 1861 proclamation from the great emancipator himself, Abraham Lincoln, that declared recently freed persons to be property and thus were to be turned to their owners and re-enslaved. We were also joined by Chinwezu Abu, the moderator for the Millions for Prisoners Human Rights Coalition, to update us on the events and the results of the Shut Them Down 2021 movement. So if you missed that episode, definitely tune into that. Great episode, great information was disseminated in that. This week, we're joined by Her Majesty, the Queen Mother of Benin, West Africa, to discuss international prison systems and the modern slavery abolition movement from an African-centered global perspective. She's the founder of the Afro-Atlantic Theologies and Treaties Institute, travels extensively to promote human rights for African descendants globally. Her Majesty is also a committee member for the UN and a partner in consulting with the Abolish Slavery National Network. So Max and I had a live interview with the Queen Mother this past Friday, and we'll play that interview in its entirety on tonight's broadcast. We'll also catch you up on the latest news in Slave Catcher Chronicles and the slavery abolition movement. We have some powerful poetry, some dope music like that opening track that you just heard, and the words of our ancestors brought back to life. So before we start, Max, tell us a little bit about your week.
Well, a couple, you know, as always, I'm keeping it moving. I'm usually very busy doing some shit, but I've really been out of sorts this week, physically, as well as emotionally, kind of just worn out. But I want to make note of one thing first, is that yesterday was the anniversary of the Fugitive Slave Act, the compromise of 1850, that they compromised with slavers, which would re-enslave people all across America. I want to read a couple of parts of it. This is from the Fugitive Slave Laws. It said, and be it further enacted that any person who shall knowingly and willingly obstruct, hinder, or prevent such claimant, his agent or attorney, or any persons or persons lawfully assisting him, her, or them for arresting such a fugitive from service or labor, or shall harbor or conceal such fugitive, shall be subject to a fine not exceeding $1,000 and imprisonment not exceeding 6 months. $1,000 in 1850 was a damn fortune. That's like $100,000 a day or something like that. You
right.
know what I mean? So that's the value that they put on this, where even in the northern states, they open up their doors and say, come on and get all our Negroes and take them back to wherever they say they own them from. As a matter of fact, they even put into the Fugitive Slave Act that in no trial or hearing under this act shall the testimony of such alleged fugitive be admitted in evidence. You couldn't even speak for yourself. You couldn't even say, you know, nobody owns me. I was born in Connecticut. They wouldn't accept it. So basically, if the white guy said you was his, you was his. Slave catchers came and got you. Sometimes they killed you. Sometimes they brutalized you. Sometimes they rape you. And that was back in 1850. In 2021, we're still doing the same damn thing. So, yeah, yesterday. Let's remember that. That's America.
Absolutely. Ain't that America, is what Bruce Springsteen would say.
And you and I did an interview yesterday with Sister Janice Graham, old friend of mine, from Our Common Ground. And that was pretty powerful as well. She asked us to come in and speak about the Attica Uprising, as well as connected to modern-day slavery and human trafficking and genocide, which I think we effectively did. I might have just pushed it a little far because I was, like, challenging people, like, let me know right now. Call up on the phone to this program if you know of something that is more important to end than slavery and genocide. Come on and give me your ideas. I'm like, yeah, go ahead, do it. Because, you know,
right,
slavery
exactly.
and genocide, top of the list, man. I don't know what the hell people be thinking. Before we get that slavery and genocide, you know, we need minimum wages. We need a raise in minimum wages before we get that slavery and genocide thing. You know, or
you know,
California's
on
fire.
It just makes no sense.
Yeah.
Just makes no sense. You know, I keep referring to the agenda that they have for ACA3 out in California, where we looked at the agenda. Here they have, you know, overhead in the chamber, in the assembly chamber, that is the duty of the legislature to enact just laws. And so you say, well, okay, they have abolishing slavery on their agenda. So you would think it would be number one on the list, but it was number
right?
41 on the agenda. 41. So they felt as though there were 41 other things that were far more important than ending slavery in California. And they didn't even get to it that day.
Yeah, they are really trying to push what we're doing as some form of symbolic gesture, and that could be nothing could be further from the truth than that. There is nothing symbolic about actually ending slavery in your Constitution. That is not symbolic. The Constitution itself is not symbolic. So how can anything in it be symbolic?
Right.
Well, I'm looking forward to today's discussion, because it really wasn't an interview, it was a discussion. So I think, man, we should just go ahead and start getting into that so the rest of our audience
Absolutely.
Who's been waiting as well can hear it too. All right, so without further ado, as you would say, right, we're going to go into
yeah.
part one of our discussion with the Queen Mother. And you'll be hearing some music in the background, and that's from Mamadou Diabaté. It's from his Tungu album, and it uses the traditional African kora. Without any further ado, you're listening to Abolition Today, abolitiontoday.org, with Max Parthas and Yusuf Hassan, and here is the Queen Mother. Abolition Today. Greetings, this is Max Parthas from Abolition Today. I'm here with my co-host Yusuf Hassan, and we have a very special guest for our program today. Her Majesty the Kojito Dewote Desir Honom Hana II Wele is the Queen Mother of the Royal Palace. She is a high priest in Haitian voodoo and a chief of the Zangbeto and Ngungu secret societies. The founder of the Afro-Atlantic Theologies and Treaties Institute travels extensively to promote human rights for African descendants globally. A bi-continental woman, the Queen Mother lives between the United States of America and the Republic of Benin. In almost 600 years, she is the first person in the Americas and the African diaspora designated as a crown head in Benin, the first Haitian to be enthroned on the African continent, and the first publicly enthroned Kojito or Mother of the Leopard in Benin Republic since the end of the 19th century. An educator, author, and activist, she is a thought leader in spiritual reparations, heritage, and tourism, and postmodern human geography. She's an author and curator whose work focuses on issues of cultural and spatial production, particularly as it is concerned as it concerns the sacred and contemporary art forms produced by people of African descent. The Queen Mother focuses on product development, sustainable energy production, and rebuilding the primary school associated with the Royal Palace. You can find out a lot more information about the Queen Mother, Her Majesty, at queenmotherERD2H2.net. Once again, I'm Max Parvis. Welcome to Abolition Today, Your Majesty. We are honored to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here with you. And my apologies to everyone who tuned in back in July, was it?
Yeah, July 11th, yes.
Yes, I was seriously ill and could not join all of you. But thank you for your faith and trust in us and for rejoining us again.
Amen, brother.
So thank you.
Yeah, we're just grateful that you were able to reschedule, and we're just honored to have you here with us today.
Thank you.
I want to give a little background of information about our relationship. We've known each other for about a year now. We were introduced by Brother Sean Darling. Her Majesty is a member of a committee on the United Nations, is also involved in the Durban Declaration, which we have just celebrated the anniversary of recently. And we have been speaking with her in regards over this past year about international support, particularly from the United Nations and the African nations, in regards to ending slavery in America. And by default, helping to end slavery, when I say slavery, I mean legalized slavery, across the globe, which has been adopted by nations all over the world. Well, for those that don't know, and you should know if you're listening to Abolition Today, that slavery is legal in the United States through the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, as well as two dozen state constitutions. And that model of prison for profit, which has been practiced since 1865, has now spread to global proportions where, for instance, on the entire continent of Africa, the largest private employer is a prison company by the name of G4S, which has over 120,000 employees, and that is just ridiculous. So, Queen Mother, we appreciate you being here today, and we are very thankful that we have you on our side in regards to an international plea to help get the support to get this done. I'll pass the mic over to you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, this really is an important issue. So a lot of my work has focused on the elimination of racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia, and other forms of intolerance. I know with a particular focus on Afrophobia, and Afrophobia, as you know, is that form of violence that is not only physical, but it's psychosocial, that places this irrational fear against the African person, the person of African descent, and his or her culture. And I believe that Afrophobia is at the heart of the mass incarceration that we see happening in this country and this growing global need to clamp down on the presence and make us invisible and silence the voices of people of African descent globally. So we really do need to talk about this. And this issue is particularly important in the 20th anniversary of the Durban Declaration and Program of Action Plan, and then within that, the International Decade for People of African Descent, started in 2015 and ends in 2024.
Thank you. It does seem like here in the United States, particularly in other European countries, that it is being used to silence voices, to control populations, to a larger degree commit genocide, because you're not making babies in no prisons here in the United States, and it takes a lot of people off of the streets during their prime years. Not to mention the murders being done by police on a regular basis. We crunched the numbers not too long ago, and on an average, about 1,200 people, according to the government, which you know is probably a low ball, about 1,200 people a year are killed by police. And if you just multiply that times a decade, you're talking about 12,000 people dead at the hands of police in a single decade, just from the police alone, not counting what happens inside the prisons themselves and the jails, where those numbers are nearly double. So we're talking about something like 35, 36,000 people in a single decade killed by our system of criminal justice.
Yeah.
Now, in regards to other nations, particularly African nations, I suspect it might be more of a economic issue, trying to earn, to create that economic development program that has been developed here in the United States, where we use racism. You can't really use that reasoning in places like Ghana, where the human rights atrocities in their prisons are beyond belief. They sit knee to back. That's how they sit and sleep, because they can't move. It's like a slave ship that is so overcrowded, and there's no health care for them. They barely are eating, and oftentimes they never even get a trial. They're just captured on the street, accused of a crime, and then put into a cell in this hell on earth. So America is definitely all about the racism, as well as Europe. And in America, we have more black men behind bars and cages built for human beings than all of the top five African nations, top five populated African nations combined. So we're way above everybody else when it comes to just throwing black bodies into these cages. But on the other hand, as I mentioned, in other African nations, it's more about the money. Any commentary on that, Queen Mother?
Yes, I mean, unfortunately, as we strive for quote unquote development, money is an issue, and governments will seek out whatever resources are available to them to secure revenue. So the temptation, the seduction of funds, of jobs, of various kinds of opportunities that will help create employment opportunities in developing countries is going to be taken by governments. And I'm not saying that they're not going to reflect on the consequences and the implications of being engaged to the prison industrial complex, especially when it's not being defined. The notion of prison isn't being defined, and the notion of incarceration isn't being defined by them, but from the outside. So yes, money is a concern. I would say that, but I'm not going to back down from my argument about Afrophobia, and I say that because while racism isn't the problem itself, we do have issues of caste in our African societies and in the Caribbean. And quite as it's kept, even in the U.S. But it's more pronounced in places like, well, as far as African descendants are concerned, it's most acutely pronounced in places like Nepal, India, Pakistan, in that whole Indo-Pakistan region that we are aware of. But the issue of caste is a problem here on the African continent as well as in the Caribbean. The vestiges of colonialism and the desire to, again, minimize the presence, the visibility, the voice of the person of African descent is what has replaced racism. You know, the notion of enslavement, of incarcerating the black body, whether it's on this side of the Atlantic or on this side of the Atlantic, is still part of the infrastructure of life here, its cultural infrastructure, and the mentality of authorities here. They're in some ways different sides of the same coin. We often recognize one side of the coin being more prominent than the other, but it's still the same issue when you look at it at the end of the day.
I don't blame you for not backing down on Afrophobia. I believe that is correct. And I think you also hit the nail on the head when you mentioned colonialism. A couple of examples. I'll give one, and then if Yusuf is willing, maybe he can give the other, which is the story of what happened with Jamaica when they asked for reparations. But in Nigeria, for instance, back in the 1960s, Nigeria didn't have any prisons. It wasn't something that they manage in their society, and now they have over 200 prisons in Nigeria just since 1960, and that was because of colonialism, and it put these systems into play within those communities and then played people against each other using their powers in order to create the conditions that we see now in Nigeria and also Jamaica. So I'll pass that mic over to Brother Yusuf so he can tell the story about what happened when Jamaica asked for reparations. Yusuf, you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. So, did you mean Jamaica or did you mean Haiti?
I'm talking about Jamaica. Remember when they asked for reparations and Britain made their counter offer to reparations?
I recall. I just don't recall the story behind it. I do recall it, though.
All right, well, I'll give it real quick. Of course, as you know, Jamaica demanded reparations, and they spoke with Britain about receiving these reparations. And in lieu of reparations, Britain offered to build a new prison, a for-profit private prison.
Right.
In Jamaica as their form of reparations, explaining that it would generate revenue for them on a consistent basis by having this prison that Britain built and manages. So for them, that was their offer of reparations by locking more black people up in Jamaica and making it into a business. Your Majesty?
Yeah, it's pretty damn offensive when you stop and think about it and connect the dots to other things about why are so many Jamaicans and why are so many African Americans in prison to begin with, and part of it has to do with the use and or the sale of drugs and marijuana in particular. And now, who wants who has legalized the use of marijuana, and more importantly, who is profiting from that? So there are these ironies that are there that we really need to reflect upon and respond to. But I wanted to go back for a minute to something that I said earlier. Yeah, I think that we need to keep in mind because it's about who's articulating the discourse and who's controlling the narrative. And, you know, the notion, for example, of enslavement is very, very different for Africans than what it was for Europeans. You know, chattel slavery, where people are a furniture, basically, and can be sold willy-nilly, families taken apart, all that sort of thing was the norm during historic slavery. But the African version of enslavement didn't involve destroying families, people's names being forgotten, or annihilated their cultural sensibilities being erased, you might be considered an enslaved person or belong to a class of slaves in many African countries, but you had your name, you knew who your family was, and you weren't considered a piece of property. So these are two different notions of the same construct. And so I raise this up because the notion of prison, you know, the same way all societies have had enslaved people, societies have some form of incarceration. But they could be defined very differently. And so we, you know, I'd be curious if anybody's done any research about how have African societies, by and large, as diverse, you know, as we are, how have we looked at imprisonment? How have we seen, how do we perceive incarcerated people? What constitutes a prison? You know, it isn't just a, perhaps there's no physical structure involved at all. There are limitations regarding who you can interact with and how you interact with them. Limitations about where you go, but you're not in a box somewhere. And when the notion of the box, the barracoon, for example, you mentioned Nigeria, when did that come in? Did that have something to do with contact with the Europeans and European notions of what enslaved of what prisons are, and what prisoners are to look like, and how they are to be treated? So there are these cultural differences that have historic significance, but then ultimately relate to what happens to these populations, especially once they get out from behind bars, and their ability to be reintegrated in our society that has to be addressed.
Abolition. Abolition.
Wow, Max, I was so into that that I forgot that it was going to be ending, you know,
part one.
That was just part one. And that was just so much information just there. If we would have ended it there, you know, we would have been like, wow, that was a great interview. But there's just so much more to come. So definitely stay tuned because we have three more parts to that.
We got lost in the conversation for interview. Sure.
Not even an interview, just a conversation.
Right.
And, of course, I dropped the ball. I got caught completely off guard because I'm sitting there, you know, ready to talk about something else, and you say, "Oh, Jamaican," and I'm like,
"Hey, it happens, man. We get brain parts sometimes. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it happens. But I know you knew, you just couldn't at the moment. So I thought no problem.
Yeah, my mind was just elsewhere on that. But you know, that's it. I mean, that seems to be the worldwide solution. It's like, okay, we need to generate some revenue. Let's build a prison."
But one thing, there's a couple of very key things that people should be realizing here. One, we're talking about royalty right now. This is among heads of state. You know, it's the most stable democratic nation in Africa is Benin, and and we're talking about internationally coming together on these issues. And she has some great insights. We're going to hear a whole lot more. But before we do that, let's take a quick break and digest what we just heard. With a little bit more wisdom and a song. How about that?
Sure.
My mentor, Amiri Baraka, used to explain about how art is a weapon. And honestly, we be wielding these weapons right here on this program, you know? So you know where I learned it from was Amiri Baraka. And we're going to hear a little bit from him, followed by Fatboy Slim featuring Bootsy Collins, Weapon of Choice. You're listening to Abolition Today, abolitiontoday.org with Max Bassan. You just heard part one of our conversation with Her Majesty, the Queen Mother of Benin. We'll be right back after this. Abolition. Abolition.
Today.
Art
speaks to people. That's why they use it against you. You know, everything surrounding you is art, but it's being used against you, you see. I mean, you hear hundreds of times a day stuff that's anti your development. Hundreds of times. They make you sing songs that are telling you you don't have no sense, you're crazy, you don't have no future. You think you're just singing a song. You're actually teaching yourself the propaganda of your opposed. So always the artist, progressive artist, wants to put art into the hands of the people, into the minds of the people, you know. But it's, I mean, look at the films that exist and find one of those 100 films that has a progressive line. Look at the television shows. Find either one of them that's essentially progressive. The problem is that they are able to bribe and entice our people, oppressed people, to take part in, you know, art forms that actually attack them and, you know, discriminate against them, even, you know, call them names and stuff. They are people who a lot of times are not conscious enough to avoid being placed in situations where they're actually helping their enemies, you know, because they can finally say they're getting paid, you know, and that's their excuse, you know, they're getting paid.
Featuring Bootsy Collins, Weapon of Choice. And of course my mother is the one who put me on the Bootsy Collins way back in the day when you got the Bootsy glasses inside of the album cover, you know.
Yeah.
That was a good good trip down memory lane, just even bringing up Bootsy.
No doubt, man. Well,
so
we want to keep...
you're the artist.
Yeah, shout out to, you know, Amiri's got so much to teach, just like Frederick has so much to teach. Like, I only got one mentor left who's still alive. All of my mentors have passed, and I'm
right.
still learning from them after they've passed. But
right.
let's keep the conversation with the Queen going, with Her Majesty.
Sure.
And we'll come back after that and make some commentary, maybe even take a call or two after part two. You just heard Amiri Baraka on The Art Is a Weapon with Fatboy Slim and Boosie Collins, Weapon of Choice. Next, you're going to hear part two of our conversation with Her Majesty the Queen Mother of Benin, West Africa. That will be followed by music from RTS Music Argentina. Well, not followed by, but accompanied by.
Company.
And they'll, yeah, that's Afro Percussion album. We'll be right back after this.
Abolition. Abolition.
Today. It was today. Europeans that brought these ideas to the African continent as well as other continents across the globe.
Mm-hmm.
Many didn't know anything about a prison. It wasn't something how they worked their justice. But now it's everywhere. Other examples. Let's take it home to Benin. I spoke to you earlier about it. If you don't mind,
mm-hmm.
I want to share the information. In Benin, right now, there are 11 million people. There's a population of 11 million. The incarceration rate mm-hmm. per 100,000 is 63, which is comparatively low compared to the United States. But nonetheless,
right.
their prison density, their population is at 204%. And this is an article, mm-hmm. I will read a little bit of it from theprisoninsider.com. And it says, Beninese prisoners face overcrowding and lack of access to water, food, and the supervision of trained staff. The prison occupancy rate was 204%, which is the same rate that we had in Alabama here, where the Department of Justice declared that it was a violation of human rights as well as the Eighth Amendment. They say that shared cells are overcrowded and sleeping quarters are subjected to strict rules between prisoners. So the prisoners are determining what the sleeping conditions
mm-hmm.
are. And they say that the space allocated to each inmate depends on seniority. The majority of prisoners
yeah.
sleep on the floor, head to feet, unable to move. They say that it promotes the spread of disease that develops rapidly due to a lack of hygiene. And one of the reasons for this overcrowding is the particularly high number of defendants as compared to the number of convicted persons. Again, that's what we're dealing with in the United States. We have like 12 million people going through our jail system every year, and we end up with 2.5 million who finally get convicted
mm-hmm.
and end up in a prison.
Right.
So in Benin, it's much along the same lines. Any commentary on that?
Yes, I mean, it's the same logic. And, you know, the things that we see being done in our societies on a day-to-day basis in a non-incarcerated population are the same things that we're going to see repeated in our prisons. So in a place like Benin, where, in fact, it's highly stratified, seniority does count for everything in every place that you go. You know, right down to who gets to sit next to whom, we're going to see the same phenomena playing itself out, which, of course, makes sense in the prison system. People, I find, are very litigious. I'm not saying they don't have good reason to be, but that kind of litigious mentality ends up putting all kinds of folk in prison. For long periods of time. And if you do not have family who can come in and feed you and provide you with water and take care of your needs, you're not going to be taken care of. There are no TV, you know, for you to count on. There is no television to watch. There are none of the things that perhaps in some American jails might be considered luxuries. You're just going to starve. A lot of people are afraid of going to prison here because it's just a death sentence as far as they're concerned. You know, you don't know when you're going to get out. You don't know how long you're going to be there. And if you live in the north, for example, the family is 9 hours away on a good day, you know, with roads being what they are, you might not be taken care of. So how long will you last? So these are real issues that need to be addressed. And so the imposition of, you know, the global north and its constructs of prisons can't be and shouldn't be applied to folks in the global south, because those conditions are harsh enough as they are. Now, in other places like the Seychelles, but there's a teeny little island. Almost 800 people for every 100,000 are in prison, and this is just to show you how much the prison industrial complex has penetrated the African continent, and needlessly putting people away. And there's also been a sharp increase in the female population globally, but also on the African continent, that creates all sorts of problems. And probably nothing different from what happens elsewhere. Only if once you get out in some of our societies, the African and African societies, how one is treated. I was recently told a story about a man who had been in prison because he abused his wife. Yet he managed to impregnate 10 women while in prison. Now, once these women leave prison, the fact that they have been raped and they have had children out of wedlock is going to create a whole other set of problems for them, not just economic ones, but the kind of shunning from families and the abandonment from families, social neglect that is, you know, kinship-based, that is familial, not just a kind of broader social issue. And that creates a whole set of this is part of the psychosocial violence that gets done to our communities. That then require us to find active ways of healing our people. But you know, if we live in societies where this notion of prison is a relatively new one in historic terms, we're also not going to have the resources within our societies or enough of the resources within our societies to help find remedies, cures, rehabilitative actions, healing, for those who have been imprisoned, especially those who are not convicted, are actually innocent, and have had to endure the tragedy of being in prison system, no matter where they are.
When you were talking about the women having these children out of wedlock by incarcerated individuals, it reminds me of what happens here in states. In Tutwiler's prison in Alabama would be an example, where they have an abortion clinic right there on the facility in the prison, and they have an adoption agency run by Russians just up the road. And the reason that they have these is because the guards themselves are raping the women in the prisons, which is very much like chattel slavery conditions, where you're subject to these rapes continuously. And they've known about this in Alabama for over a decade now. And the women who have told their stories about their abortions and their children being adopted and then being raped and molested by guards, the Department of Justice investigated it, and to the best of my knowledge, only a couple of the guards were terminated. The rest who were doing the raping are still there doing the raping. Right. Yes. And
no arrests.
No arrests, exactly. And I am very proud of two things. One, that we have an organization here called the Abolish Slavery National Network, which is shining a light on these human rights atrocities, and two, that we have allies like yourself who are part of the United Nations committees and able to help us get this word out across the globe so that we can build an alliance against slavery internationally. Queen Mother?
Thank you. Thank you. You know, allow me to say, first of all, I want people to understand that the UN is really for states, for member states, for countries, but it has created room for civil society. And so I, my involvement in any UN activity is from the civil society side. We're talking about the UN. I do want to mention that the UN Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice, the Group of Friends of the UN, Standard Minimum Rules for the Treatment of Prisoners, a.k.a. the Nelson Mandela Rules, along with others, met in May 2021 to discuss a common position. And the common position underscores the fundamental challenges that face prisoners globally, and that is the ultimate purpose of the sentence. And the ultimate purpose of the sentence is seen as a way to protect society from crime and recidivism by preparing prisoners for their social integration in society once they've been released. They're trying to find ways of addressing this issue and looking at issues of over-incarceration, prison overcrowding, neglect, and abuse. I think I mentioned earlier that in prisons, you find the reiteration of the same ugly scourges in our respective societies. So the problem isn't just the prisons themselves. And for me, this kind of fetish we seem to have for enslaving people, especially in the U.S., but it has now been nurtured and cultivated elsewhere in the Americas, namely Brazil and El Salvador, but is now becoming the flavor of the month in places like Benin and Ghana. But the U.N. is trying to see how it could commit to providing technical assistance and advocacy work that's aimed at shifting policies towards prevention and taking measures that will keep people out of prison. They will want to see how they can improve prison conditions and management and do a better job at rehabilitation so that there are more ex-offenders able to get, more ex-offenders able to get back into society and stay in society, as opposed to finding their way back and becoming effectively slaves of society. They're looking for ways to really encourage, the 233 prison systems that we have globally, to do some real penal reform. And also to provide better data so that we know who's in prison, why they're there, for example. As I think back about some of the work that you and I have done together, I've often talked about a kind of intertextual approach to abolition of enslavement. That is where we're looking at multiple laws, conventions, resolutions, and mandates are going to help us, even if it's just like a piece of something. The common agenda, that is a critical part of the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. The very first thing that it calls for is no one left behind. No one left behind. That includes prisoners and the formerly incarcerated. So, we've got to get involved. We've got to get involved in spaces like the UN and other world or organizations, so that whatever things that, again, laws, resolutions, etc., that they're calling for, that we are aware of them and we can use those tools as part of our arsenal to push for an end to enslavement, to abolish slavery. You know, we've talked a lot about the DDPA in the past. And those who don't know, the DDPA is the Durban Declaration and Program of Action Plan. It's a really important document that speaks against racism, racial discrimination, xenophobia. And it came out of the 2001 World Conference Against Racism that took place in Durban, South Africa. The DDPA acknowledges slavery as a crime against humanity that should have never occurred. Now they're talking about historic enslavement, but the DDPA also recognizes the continuing impact of historic enslavement, especially on African descendants, in the form of mass incarceration. And I bring this up because the issue of reparations is very much at stake in the DDPA outcome document. So we have to make sure, especially this year, the 20th anniversary of the DDPA, that this critical moral mandate doesn't expire. You know, we can't let the DDPA die. So the question of reparations, which I see it, abolition as being a part of that, you know. If we let the DDPA die, slavery and the call for abolition will be off the table as a legal issue. So we've got to work on these sorts of things. We've got to get increase our overall awareness of the international legal instruments that we have at our disposal and use them.
Abolition. Abolition. Today. Abolition.
You just heard part two of our interview with Her Majesty the Queen Mother of Benin, West Africa, and that was accompanied by the music from RGS Music Argentina, Afro Percussion album. So much stuff was discussed in that section, Max.
Still got a lot more to come, man. I'm doing like everybody else, you know. I'm sitting back and really just absorbing and learning and listening to the conversation, like our people are listening right now. You know, I don't want to add anything
right
more to it at this point. We are saying more than enough for today for you to absorb, and I'm doing it right along
exactly
with you, and there's more to come. What I'd like
some
to do,
some are probably
though,
even saying, I wish they shut up and play part three.
I know, right? That's in the back of my head right now. Like, Max, just shut up and get on to part three. But what I'd like to do is, I know that we have a lot of people who are on the line. If you want to make a question or comment, we got about 3 to 5 minutes to spare to do so. Press 1 on your keypad. And the call-in number, if you're listening live, is 515-605-9814. 515-605-9814. Remember to press 1 or we're not going to bring you in. We can't guess that you want to say something. So press 1 on your keyboard. All right, Yusuf. Yeah, man. So much that's put in there, you know, talking mm-hmm. about the cultural differences as well as the way that these systems are being adopted in other cultures. You know, where here in America,
right,
you had mentioned about, you know, it's based on race, but over there, there's a lot of caste systems. So there's Africans incarcerating Africans, but they're choosing people of particular caste to do so as their
right
target of oppression rather than by race. But the system itself is working exactly the same.
Absolutely. And, you know, I've lived in Africa and I've spent, you know, taking trips over, and I've always wanted to go with my mother. And this is one of the things that bothers her so much, you know, not just the historical aspect of, we know that we have ancestors that were responsible for putting us into the slave trade, but then also the current things that are happening, you know, through caste systems, through outside interference. We know there are a lot of agitators that are causing that, you know, so it's tough. And then, you know, she spoke about the enslaver of the month, you know, and that, you know, just hearing her say that, that this is what's going on, and just as she recognizes it, many people recognize this going on. And then when they're talking about, you know, the Durban Declaration and having the conferences, and we know that the U.S., you know, when they had the World Conference on Racism back in 2001, we know the U.S. walked out of that. You know, so it's going to be really tough bringing the U.S. to the table to talk about ending slavery in the U.S.
Well, actually, so, we go into that in our conversation in part three.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like I said,
yeah,
there's so much we've already covered, so we might as well go ahead. It's the 8 o'clock mark. It doesn't look like anybody has a question or comment. They just want to listen. So before we play part three, let's take our music break. Trust me, it fits into the narrative of everything you'll hear tonight, all right? And so we're going to listen to Sidewalk Chalk, doing Them, Us. You're listening to Abolition Today, abolitiontoday.org, with Max Parthas and Yusuf Hassan. Our discussion today is with the Queen Mother of Benin, Africa, Dewoti Desir, Anon Ana the Second, Gwele. I got it by memory, see? And
yeah,
we'll be right back.
You're good at it.
This.
Abolition.
Abolition.
Today.
Abolition.
All we hear is them, 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 all you. All we hear is them, 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 all you. What? All we hear is them, 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 all you.
They say poor might be the new black, but it's the old one. Race is just a new class. I was told once how the Irish became white. Kenyans, Jamaicans, Cubans, Nigerians, Brazilians, Haitians, and more became black. The Moors were erased fast. That's traffic as a cello. Puritans used to view blackness as of the devil. Nation of Islam said whiteness was of the devil. But through it all, the same dynasties kept going. And in my heart of hearts, I feel for those who fought as hard as they could against oligarchs. And it's time to be out as far as watching things fall apart. But once a CW becomes a C-1000, what can we do about it?
All we hear is them, us, them, us, them, us, them. All we hear is what? All we hear is them, us, them, us, them, us, them, all we hear is what?
Apparently, I fit a description given by a witness who would prefer to remain nameless as I heard the same statement. We've had a disturbance in the neighborhood.
I was a disturbance to the neighborhood. There's some hood as the neighbors. I think it's from some neighboring hood or block. Wonder why I cringe at the word neighborhood watch. When a flip of a switch is all it takes for good cops to become killer cops. A good protest is to start screaming, kill the cops! Will it stop? I say yes when I'm feeling optimistic. Cause opposition of opposition is not a given. For some reason, all we hear is them, us, them, us, them, us, them. All we hear is
yeah.
All we hear is them, us, them, us, them, us, them. All we hear is
here is them, us, them, us. That was Sidewalk Chalk with their great track, Them, Us. You know, I got a text from my mom telling me how much she loves that song, Max.
Oh, yeah. What's up, Mom? Awesome, man. Yeah, it got me feeling some kind of way, too. You know what I mean?
Right.
We must do better at loving each other. And that's what the Queen was talking about.
Exactly. She said, if you got to make me some music, you know, for a fact, I'd like and appreciate.
Mom,
so we're
going
to send her to
tape?
The Abolition Today YouTube page.
Uh-oh. Mom want me to make her a mixtape. Uh-oh. No doubt. I'm glad.
I'm just imagining her driving around blasting that out the car. Them us.
One day she's going to call in, man. Speaking of calling in, remember, press 1 on your keypad if you got a question or comment. We only have a couple minutes for it, and we got to do it in between. Because like everybody else, I'm just salivating for part 3, you know?
Yeah, okay. Jamelia just raised her hand.
Oh, there we go. Awesome.
Hello. Good evening. I'm over here in between phone calls just loving it all. She says so many things.
Yes.
Oh, my God. I'm going to have to go back and play this one over and over. One thing she said that really grabbed me, though, was that we really need to learn more about the international laws and start
mm-hmm.
exercising them. That mm-hmm. was a jewel right there. I love that. So, you know, I just want to send my love to you all, tell you all, you know, I'm constantly thinking about you. You stay in my heart and on my mind. But I'm here and beautiful tonight. I just absolutely love it.
Thank you so much, sister.
Thank you so much.
Land. Shout out to Brother Samuel, who is going to be with us sometime in 2022, I believe. So we're praying for him and looking forward to seeing him out. Thanks for commenting as well, Jamelia. Much appreciated. All right, so let's get back into the program. Like everybody else, I'm waiting for part 3. There's nothing to say that we haven't really covered. We covered it all. And you're listening to Abolition
right.
Today, abolitiontoday.org, with Yusuf Hassan and Max Parthas. Our discussion, part 3, with the Queen Mother. We'll be right back after this. Abolition. Abolition. Today.
That was a wealth of information you just shared with us. I want to switch direction just for a brief second.
Mm-hmm.
So for those who don't know, you have ties to Haiti.
Yes.
And there's always, usually when Haiti comes up, the first word that's mentioned is voodoo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and many people don't know that you have a documentary out entitled Voodoo, Theology of Liberation. I watched the preview of it. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to see the entire thing. Any information you'd like us to know about that, or you can explain what the theology of liberation is pertains to your documentary?
For sure. First of all, it's not my documentary. I featured in it, although I'm the one who provided the title for it and the reason for it. But Sister Bella Bahia, a professor, also a Haitian historian, is the other prominent person featured in that film made by Dalian and Verona Adolfo, who are Ghanaian and Black British. They're based in London. So this is a work that really started 7 years ago. The process of making documentaries is a lengthy one. I was talking about space at that time.
Okay.
And, you know, space as we understand it, space is a social construct, and space, you know, this is related to enslavement. Our spaces get restricted and or constricted. We are confined linguistically, spiritually, intellectually, genetically. That's part of the bigger agenda of genocide. And for me, Voodoo is a theology of liberation. Voodoo is about a search for peace. You know, and the search for peace is not just a spiritual or moral one, but it's also about making sure that you are an upright human being and living your best life, as we say these days. That you have security, that you know who you are, that you are able to connect with your ancestors, that you know that your children are going to be fine. When we search for peace and we search fervently for it, because that's what voodoo means, to search for that kind of peace, if you've got to go to war for it, if it gets to that point where you've got to fight for peace, then we're going to do that too. And so the notion of a theology of liberation is that, you know, the environment that we are in determines the nature of the peace that we have in our lives. But when we are effectively at war with flesh peddlers, with people who don't think that we are human, you know you're going to arrive someplace that is not connected to you, and probably within a year you'll be dead, but if you manage to survive that first year, you'll be dead in 3 years. That kind of knowledge is going to cultivate something else in a person, a very militant, a very radical vision of the world, and one that is going to take the notion of peace, that idea of being a warrior for peace, into another space, into another headspace, into another military dimension, into another metaphysical realm. And so the film is unpacking what some of that is about. And, the Haitian struggle for liberation officially began in 1791, August 14, 1791, and culminated in our Declaration for Independence in January 1804. We engaged in this battle. We became the first republic
not just the first black republic, but the first republic, the first people anywhere to liberate themselves from enslavement. And when Jean-Jacques Dessalines changed the Constitution, he declared all black men free and said that if you were a person of African descent, no matter where you were in the world, as long as you could make it to IET, you would be a free man, you would be a free woman there. And, of course, IET used its resources because it was considered the richest colony in the Americas, but used the resources. If you didn't actually have money, we had coffee, we had gold, we had all sorts of things, and used that to support liberation struggles in Latin America, for example, in El Salvador, in Venezuela, in Colombia, with the understanding that you support us and you free every person of African descent in your territory. This is a spiritual position. It's a moral position that we took. But it is also about how we see our societies, where we honor and we respect one another. We honor and respect our ancestors. We honor and respect the Most High. And so this film is looking at these issues and really working to break down the stereotypes that we have about voodoo, with people running around with chicken bones in their noses and engage in satanic worship, which has nothing to do with us. Nothing.
Yeah, thank you for that, Queen Mother. Just one follow-up question, because you brought up Haiti gaining its liberation from France. And we know that from the period of gaining independence until about 1947, Haiti had to pay reparations to France. And Forbes magazine has estimated it to be about $21 billion that they've paid during that period. And I believe that has contributed to the conditions in Haiti up until this day. Any commentary on that?
Absolutely. How do you figure you're not going to pay $21 billion to somebody and not be broke at the end of the day?
Right?
How are you going to advance when every resource that you do, everything that you have, 99 cents out of your dollar has to go towards paying this debt and this perverse definition of what reparations means? But this perverse construct, and this is why I talked earlier about who's defining the narrative. If it's them, they're going to take a position that's always going to work. I hate to talk about them and us, but there is a them and us.
There is a them and us.
There is this polemic that is at play, and our historic oppressors have always and only done things in their favor, in their benefit, and never in ours. And so we have to take back, we've got to reclaim those spaces, linguistic, legal, spiritual, and otherwise, so that we do, in fact, liberate ourselves. All of this historical perversity, again, continues to impact itself on IET, but also on all of us. Because my position is, what happens to IET happens to you as an African descendant. Master, when we were supposed to talk back in July, it was just a couple of days after the Haitian president, Jovenel Moïse, was assassinated. We were supposed to talk on the 11th. He was murdered. He was slaughtered on the 8th. Now, the first citizen of a country, a head of state, is at home in his bed asleep, and somebody can come up, or these people can come up in there. I don't know the word I really want to use, but I'll be polite.
But people can come up in there, and mercenaries is coming up in space and breach his home and take away his life. What does that tell you as a person of African descent? You are not safe anywhere. We are not safe anywhere. We've had similar incidents happen to regular citizens in the United States. A sister is in her bed. Police come in, take her life away. That's a regular citizen. And I'm not saying heads of states are more important than anybody else, but heads of state, in theory, are the most secure people on the planet. And yet they manage to do that to him. So what does that tell the rest of us? You know, that our lives, too, are in danger. Our lives, too, don't matter that way. But it also tells us that we really need to be in a state of solidarity with one another, to know who we are, know each other's histories, so that we're in a better position to prevent such things, to protect ourselves and to protect each other, and have a clearly articulated response to these kinds of dangers. So that's actually something I would have talked about then, but I feel compelled to, and we still need to talk about now, the need to create solidarity among us. And the work that we are doing with the Abolish Slavery National Network is about that. That's why we're not looking at things just in the United States. We're looking at things globally because it is incumbent upon us. We need to create and sustain meaningful solidarity among all of us. And let me say that, you know, one of the spaces that we need to take advantage of to create and sustain solidarity, especially within the world, the UN system, is that we now have a permanent forum for people of African descent. It's been in existence since August 2021, so this is a very, very recent development, although it is something that, as part of the DDPA process, has been, you know, in the works for at least a decade. The permanent forum for people of African descent is like a 10-person body that is intended to amplify our voices as African descendants, and it's going to give us an opportunity to respond to all kinds of UN matters, all sorts of bills, of resolutions, ideas. You know, we'll be able to respond to these things in real time. So we've got to make sure that the permanent forum, whoever its leaders are, know what we think. They need to know just how important abolition is to us. And so our collective involvement at UN events, you know, and many of them are now taking online. Our participation counts there, you know, our emails, letters, all of that counts. We have to make sure that the permanent forum hears from us. And along with the working group of experts for people of African descent, you know, as long as it's functioning, we have to do the same. We have to do the same to our politicians, our legislators. The UN consists of member states, as I say. We are civil society, but the UN consists of member states, and the state ultimately consists of people. And we as taxpayers, right, that means that we're paying their salaries. That means that the state works for us. So they, too, have got to know what we think. We've got to let our voices be heard and demand an end to enslavement in our global prison system.
Abolition. Abolition. Today. Abolition. Today. Abolition. Today. Abolition. Abolition.
That was part three of our conversation with the Queen Mother, and that was accompanied by the traditional African voodoo drum music. And that was a great segment. She just the whole conversation was just so great. We got so much information out of her, and I just wanted to read a little piece about the permanent forum on people of African descent. It was created on August 2nd, 2021, so it's just something newly created, and it's a consultative mechanism for people of African descent and other relevant stakeholders as a platform for improving the safety and quality of life and livelihoods of people of African descent, as well as an advisory body to the Human Rights Council in line with the program of activities for the implementation of the International Decade for People of African Descent and in close coordination with existing mechanisms. You can find links to the UN site, OHCHR, on our Abolition Today Facebook page. Max?
Yeah, man, like I said, I'm just really sitting here and listening closely, and I understand what she's saying, what we've been saying, that we need to come together in solidarity, not just in America, but this is a global issue. This prison-for-profit model has been adopted all across the globe now. Slavery is once again like it was in the transatlantic slave trade. But instead of shipping people from place to place, all you got to do is go online and buy yourself some stocks in prison, buy yourself some jail bonds in some state that you don't live in or some country you don't live in, make some investments in some prisons, and you're owning people. You know, electricity is new since 1865. We got electricity now and all the things that come from that. And it streamlines slavery. So just we need to be in solidarity because it crosses more than racial boundaries. It crosses caste as well as class. This is not an issue that can be solved with a check. All right. So with that being said, man, we got one more part here. And we have also a wonderful Bridging the Gap segment ahead. So one more time, I'm going to open up the phone lines for another comment before we go to part four. If you have something to say, just press one on your keypad. Jamelia, your line has just remained open because I know you already have the respect to put it on mute when you're not talking. So if you want to speak at any time, feel free. All right. I'm going to go ahead and get in part four. Part four of our conversation with the Queen Mother of Benin. You'll hear in the background accompanying it, War, the World is a Ghetto. You're listening to Abolition Today, abolitiontoday.org. We'll be right back.
Abolition Today.
I'm glad that you spoke about the theology of liberation. That is wonderful to hear in that concept. It was supposed to be the same thing for Christianity. As a matter of fact, Jesus said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He sent me to proclaim that the captives will be released, the blind will see, and the oppressed will be set free." Now, if that's not a theology of liberation, then what is?
Yeah.
But we have fallen so far from being Christ-like here in the United States that the exact opposite has become the truth for them. And this is something that we see spreading all over the globe, as you have mentioned. And, you know, it is certainly a need for us to be unified on a global level in this issue because it is a global issue. There's different levels of it. Some are worse, some are better, but it's all coming from the same roots, the same evil roots of putting people in the cages to collect money on it and to control populations. This is definitely evil. And the conditions are definitely criminal, and we should be addressing them as such. Also, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Durban Declaration. The Durban Declaration, as powerful as it is, the United States walked out on it, and not once but twice. The second time, I believe they took 14 nations with them in boycotting the Durban Declaration. So the United States doesn't want anything to do with the Durban Declaration, and I think that's very much because the finger is being pointed directly at them and what they're doing. We have also applied other international treaties in our efforts here. For instance, in our legal efforts to fight against the system, we're applying the Harvard Bellagio guidelines on slavery, which are very simple, and it's something that the United Nations or the United States has signed on to. And I'll just read a little bit about how they determine what is and what isn't slavery. They say in cases of slavery, the exercise of the powers attached to the right of ownership should be understood in constituting control over a person in such a way as to significantly deprive that person of his or her individual liberty, with the intent of exploitation through the use, management, profit, transfer, or disposal of that person. Usually this exercise will be supported by and obtained through means such as violent force, deception, and or coercion. And we see that happening all over the world right now. The powers attached to the right of ownership. Here in the United States, they're called state property. If that's not the right of ownership, I don't know what is. And they take away every human right and civil right and constitutional right that they have and only allow what they determine, as if this is your furniture. Isn't that what you called it earlier? Like furniture.
It's chattel slavery, yes.
Right. And so that is our legal standing that we're using on an international level in collaboration with other documents such as the Durban Declaration.
Yeah. Absolutely, that is the critical thing to do. Use every legal instrument that is available to us. You know, no stone can afford to be unturned in this matter. I don't know how long prisons have been in existence. I guess as long as human beings have, or the notion of prisons. But the current our current understanding of it, which at least for the purposes of this discussion we have agreed, is more of a white European or global northern construct, is abominable.
Uh-oh, I think I lost somebody.
We lost the queen. I'm still
right.
Here.
We'll just wait for her to call back in. It may take her a minute or two to realize that she got kicked off or lost her phone charge or whatever it may be. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. All right, Queen Mother, I understand that your time is very limited, so I would like to give you the opportunity to give us any final messages or send us to any websites or promotions that you might think our audience should be aware of. And I would also like to say we are very appreciative, Your Majesty, of your time here with us on Abolition Today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It's always my pleasure to speak with you and to stand in solidarity with you in this struggle. In terms of websites, a lot of the places I've been referencing or nations I've been referencing have to do with the UN. So it's un.org. Very simple. Just www.un.org and go there and look up the permanent forum and see what that is about and how we might be able to use it on our behalf. Learn about the Durban Declaration and Program of Action Plan as well. You know, check out the Commission on Crime Prevention and Criminal Justice and that group of friends of the UN standard minimum rules for the treatment of prisoners so that and the common agenda so that you do have a very full and global outlook on what is being said about the state of our world. And while there's a lot of things there that are supposedly for our common interest, our common good, I think you also find there are places that or issues that are or points that are made that really don't speak to our needs as people of African descent and our needs as people who are subjected to being in incarcerated, to being effaced, to being snatched off the streets, and greater victims of whatever forms of extrajudicial violence that manifests themselves.
We are the largest number of people who have been incarcerated anywhere in the world at any given time, and continue to be. Don't lose sight of that. Those of you who think that, oh, it's all in the past, history doesn't matter, history matters. We're still making it. And history grinds a very slow wheel, as does justice. So please get involved. Please support the Abolish Slavery Network. If you have the financial means to do so. If you have other resources, make those contributions. Help us help you. Help us help your team.
Indeed, Your Majesty. Thank you so much for being here. You know, when we first met, I said I had a dream that one day we would be at the United Nations making our case to that body there. And now I believe it's more of a prediction or plan that one day you and I and other members of these organizations will be standing in front of that body presenting our case. Thank you so much for your time here today.
My pleasure. Okay. Thank you, Brother Max and Brother Yusuf, for this opportunity.
Yes. Bye-bye. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Queen Mother. And I greet you with whatever is befitting your title in parting. I'm not aware of the custom, and I just want to make sure
it's
that I'm
right.
being respectful. Thankful for you being part of the ASNN, the Abolish Slavery National Network, because this is not a popular space. So for someone to be involved in this, they have to really, their heart has to truly be in it. And we see that in you. Your actions also confirm, you know, what's in your heart, and we're just grateful for that. And I just wanted to say that to you before you parted.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
What is the traditional saying when you finish a wonderful conversation such as we've had in Benin?
Usually people end things with, well, of course, with thanks and with benedictions. Especially as the Queen Mother, or if you were talking to the King, you know, long live the Queen Mother, long live the Kingdom.
Long live the Queen Mother, and long live the King.
I mean.
Yes.
I say. Have a blessed day, Your Majesty, and I will speak with you soon.
Abolition. 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 Abolition.
Wow, Max.
That's it in its entirety.
Yeah, I'm sad that it ended.
Yeah, it was a very powerful conversation. And again, you know, just consider the implications, and consider what it took to get to this conversation. You know what I mean? And I don't just mean
right.
like the current events. You know, the ancestors are smiling on us. Like they're opening up avenues, they're making conversations happen, they're whispering in our ears and touching our hearts to point out certain things so that these things will come into fruition. Freedom comes. It's going to come. Freedom is going to come. You know? Count on it. It happens.
Count on it.
Well, yeah, that was powerful. My love and appreciation goes out to Her Majesty the Queen Mother, Dawoodi Desir, and hopefully she hears this interview or discussion, which is really what it was, and says, you know, that's one of my favorite discussions that I've had. You know what I mean? Puts it up
and,
there with
and
a
that says a lot because, you know, you and I have had some great guests on the program, and then, you know, all your years on other networks, you know, you've had great interviews, so wow. But this one is just so... I can't even describe it, and you know, I'm never for a loss for words.
We covered a lot of stuff. We covered it's so much to say, but I think the core issues behind it here, well, the core thing to take away is that solidarity is needed right now. It's life or death. It literally is.
Right.
Pick a side. Stop playing. Get off the fence. Pick a side. What we're dealing with is very real, and people are literally losing their freedom and lives and property over it, and we need to change it yesterday. So solidarity is needed now. I know you got all kinds of other issues that you have championed all your lives or that you think about more, but where on your list of priorities is slavery and genocide? And how much of the world has to go into this system of slavery and genocide before you give a damn? They don't get
right.
you today. They'll get you tomorrow. All right. Well, with that being said, let's
right.
go ahead and get into our sponsors. That you know, everybody that helped us put this together, Brother Sean Darling, shout out to you, man. You
yes.
Made the conversation
yes.
possible, introducing us to the Queen about a year ago. And remember, we have an opportunity to be great in this nation. Not every generation gets an opportunity to be great. And we have that opportunity now. We could end slavery. Think about it. And it doesn't have to be Republican or Democrat or white or black or red or brown. Just end slavery. It affects us all. Yusuf?
That's it. I mean, to, you know, 150 years ago, we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing right now. We'd have to be meeting in secret in someone's basement somewhere. And now we have the opportunity to have this big voice, not just here, but in other places, you know, having a proposed amendment on the Senate floor right now. We're in the UN, you know, we're all over the place. And yes, people need to join forces with us. And first of all, let me just thank our sponsors, Jailhouse Lawyers Speak, I Am We Ubuntu Prison Advocacy Network, Same Urge, Quakers Uplifting Racial Justice, the Paul Cuffey Abolitionist Center, Prismatic Dreams, and the Black Talk Radio Network. Remember to subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/abolitiontoday. You definitely want to search for the abolitionist music on the channel. It's everything that you hear on the program. We've been on for since March 2020, so there's a lot of tracks. I think last count was about 240 tracks that we have there. Abolition Today is also available on all major podcast platforms and a simulcast on the Black Talk Radio Network. Also, remember to join the movement at abolishslavery.us and also go to endtheexception.com, or you can text the words END, E-N-D, the exception as one word. Text that to 52886. Is that correct, Max? 52886?
Yes.
And that will send out your support of the proposed amendment to your state senators as well as to legislatures within your state. Also, if you want to find more information on the Queen Mother, that's available at Queen Mother E, the number 2, H, the number 2.net. So we want to get into our Bridging the Gap segment. Or Max, did you have any further announcements or statements
nope,
that you wanted to make
it,
before
bro.
We
We're
close
out of time
up?
Now. We're
well,
out of
great
time
show,
now.
Brother.
Great
yes,
show,
sir.
Bro.
So we have something special for you this evening, as we always do in our Bridging the Gap segment. We have Chadwick Boseman. He's reading the narrative of the life of Frederick, and that's going to be followed by Salute, Plantation Mentality. So we'll be back next Sunday, September 26th, God willing, with another masterclass on slavery abolition. So until next week, think about abolition today. Peace and blessings be upon you all.
Peace.
Abolition. Abolition.
Every year brings with it multitudes of this class of slaves. It was doubtless in consequence of a knowledge of this fact that one great statesman of the South predicted the downfall of slavery by the inevitable laws of population. Whether this prophecy is ever fulfilled or not, it is nevertheless plain that a very different looking class of people are springing up at the South and are now held in slavery from those originally brought to this country from Africa. And if their increase do no other good, it will do away the force of the argument that God cursed Ham, and therefore American slavery is right. If the lineal descendants of Ham are alone to be scripturally enslaved, it is certain that slavery at the South must soon become unscriptural, for thousands are ushered into the world annually who, like myself, owe their existence to white fathers, and those fathers most frequently their own masters. I've had two masters. My first master's name was Anthony. I do not remember his first name. He was generally called Captain Anthony, a title which I presume he acquired by selling a craft on the Chesapeake Bay. He was not considered a rich slaveholder. He owned two or three farms and about 30 slaves. His farms and slaves were under the care of an overseer. The overseer's name was Plummer. Mr. Plummer was a miserable drunkard, a profane swearer, and a savage monster. He always went armed with a cowskin and a heavy cudgel. I have known him to cut and slash the women's heads so horribly that even Master would be enraged at his cruelty and would threaten to whip him if he did not mind himself. Master, however, was not a humane slaveholder. It required extraordinary barbarity on the part of an overseer to affect him. He was a cruel man, hardened by a long life of slaveholding. He would at times seem to take great pleasure in whipping a slave. I have often been awakened at the dawn of day by the most heart-rending shrieks of an own aunt of mine, whom he used to tie up to a joist and whip upon her naked back till she was literally covered with blood. No words, no tears, no prayers from his gory victim seemed to move his iron heart from its bloody purpose. The louder she screamed, the harder he whipped, and where the blood ran fastest, there he whipped longest. He would whip her to make her scream, and whip her to make her hush. And not until overcome by fatigue would he cease to swing the blood-clotted cowskin. I remember the first time I ever witnessed this horrible exhibition. I was quite a child, but I well remember it. I never shall forget it whilst I remember anything. It was the first of a long series of such outrages of which I was doomed to be a witness and a participant. It struck me with awful force. It was the blood-stained gate, the entrance to the hell of slavery through which I was about to pass. It was a most terrible spectacle. I wish I could commit to paper the feelings with which I beheld it. This occurrence took place very soon after I went to live with my old master, and under the following circumstances. Aunt Hester went out one night, where or for what I do not know, and happened to be absent when my master desired her presence. He had ordered her not to go out evenings and warned her that she must never let him catch her in company with a young man who was paying attention to her belonging to Colonel Lloyd. The young man's name was Ned Roberts, generally called Lloyd's Ned. Why Master was so careful of her may be safely left to conjecture. She was a woman of noble form and of graceful proportions. Having very few equals and fewer superiors in personal appearance among the colored or white women of our neighborhood, Aunt Hester had not only disobeyed his orders in going out, but had been found in company with Lloyd's Ned, which circumstance I found from what he said while whipping her was the chief offense. Had he been a man of pure morals himself, he might have been thought interested in protecting the innocence of my aunt, but those who knew him will not suspect him of any such virtue. Before he commenced whipping Aunt Hester, he took her into the kitchen and stripped her from neck to waist, leaving her neck, shoulders, and back entirely naked. He then told her to cross her hands, calling her at the same time a dead bitch. After crossing her hands, he tied them with a strong rope and led her to a stool under a large hook in the joist put in for the purpose. He made her get upon the stool and tied her hands to the hook. She now stood fair for his infernal purpose. Her arms were stretched up at their full length so that she stood upon the ends of her toes. He then said to her, "Now, you damn bitch, I'll learn you how to disobey my orders." And after rolling up his sleeves, he commenced to lay on the heavy cowskin. And soon, the warm red blood amid heart-rending shrieks from her and horrid oaths from him came dripping to the floor. I was so terrified and horror-stricken at the sight that I hid myself in a closet and dared not venture out till long after the bloody transaction was over. I expected it would be my turn next. It was all new to me. I had never seen anything like it before. I had always lived with my grandmother on the outskirts of the plantation where she was put to raise the children of the younger women. I had therefore been, until now, out of the way of the bloody scenes that often occurred on the plantation.
Down, even kill our own family. But if I speak the truth, the whole world might be mad at me. It's one explanation.
What's that?
Plantation mentality. Plantation mentality. If you can never acknowledge that, it's the reason why people say we don't know how to act. We keep the same habits passed down through generations and get the same conclusion. Death of mass incarceration. My folk came over on a boat in 1619, locked in chains. Bad for 400 years to the present, still ain't a whole lot changed. Who can you blame for somebody picking a gun or robbing a stove for food? But his baby is starving, can't get no job because he got in trouble in school. If I get a million, how could I blame my folks if they try to rob me? The system we're using corrupted, it's been uploaded with a virus. Come to the project, see the descendants of slaves killing each other to build. They ain't trying to solve it, they bought the first one to aid to get paid off every deal. To win, you gotta defy the laws of gravity. We pull each other down, even kill our own family. But if I speak the truth, the whole world might be mad at me. It's one explanation.
What's that?
Plantation mentality. Plantation mentality. So people stop asking questions like who were black Americans before Harriet Tubman. When you start telling the truth, a lie like a Swiss to subject. I come up, you pull me down, they cooking crabs in the bucket. Jim Crow law still fly in the south, you can die from the color of your skin. The law that we live by was made for the slaves, all stacked up against you to win. I can't pretend I don't see the face of a lot of our people who walk around hopeless. It's a condition that most of us suffer from without a doctor's diagnosis. Most of my history deleted, my folks took the name of a slave master. That's like comprehending a book, dismissing the first eight chapters. Caught in the raps of lack of knowledge, violence, and police brutality. Dear Lord, I wanna change, how do I erase this mentality?
Hey, this is Max Parsons. One more time, I just want to put an ask out there. If you like what we're doing here with Abolition Today, you can make a donation to the Paul Cuff Theater, where it is produced from. Our Cash App is Abolition CTR with a capital A and a capital C. That's, of course, $ Abolition Center, capital A, CTR. And also our PayPal is abolitionistcenter@gmail.com. We survive on small donations. We appreciate you, and we'll see you next week. Peace.